Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to get a legislative wrap-up from the recent session that just concluded, and we'll meet Minnesota's first female Army general officer. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Since its birth on June 14, 1775, over a year before the Declaration of Independence, the United States Army has played a vital role in the growth and development of our nation. Since then, the Army has been at the forefront of defending our country's freedom. It all started in the spring of 1775, as colonial troops were about to confront British troops near Boston, Massachusetts. Recognizing the need to enlist the support of all of the American seaboard colonies, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress appealed to the Second Continental Congress, that time held in Philadelphia, to assume the authority of the New England Army. Congress voted to adopt the Boston troops and resolved to form a committee to bring in a draft of rules and regulations for the government of the Army. When George Washington received his appointment as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army and took command on July 3, 1775, there is no way he could have imagined what the Army would become. Soldiers have fought our wars, the American Revolution, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and now the Iraq and Afghanistan Wars. And today, soldiers stand ready around the world. The Army's birthday is a recognition of our history, traditions, and service to our nation. It's also the day for us to imagine what it will grow to into the future. Happy birthday.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. We have two special guests in the studio today from the Minnesota Legislature. First is Senator Jerry Newton, DFL District 37, and Representative Bob Detmer, a Republican from District 39A. Gentlemen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Yeah, good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Senator Newton, I want to start with you. I understand you were in the military, in the Army, and served in Vietnam.
That's correct. I had 23 years of active service and was fortunate enough to serve in Vietnam. I was there in 1968 and 69.
And you ended up, before you retired, as a sergeant major.
That's correct, yes.
So can I refer to you as sergeant major today, sir?
Please do.
All right. And Representative Detmer, you served as well.
Yeah, 25 years in the Army Reserve program and was mobilized for 20 months or almost 2 years after 9/11.
And you ended up a Chief Warrant Officer 4.
CW4, that's correct.
And now have a couple of sons who are lieutenant colonels.
That's right. They both have the rank of lieutenant colonel, West Point graduates. Rob is out in Afghanistan as we speak, and his twin brother's out in Washington, D.C. He's a public affairs officer, and Rob's a military intelligence officer. So I salute them. But when they come home with the grandkids, I tell them I'm Commander-in-Chief when their mom's not there. So we...
We all salute your wife.
You bet we do.
All right, sir. Well, gentlemen, thanks for joining us in the studio today. We wanted to talk about some of the veterans' legislative accomplishments from this past session, and there's a whole list of them here. And Sergeant Major, I want to start with you. There was a nice bill funding an $8.5 million increase to the enlisted incentives appropriation. Could you tell us a little about that?
Yes. This bill came before the Senate Armed Services Committee, and the Guard has been having trouble retaining people. And it was rather difficult. We only have two of us members on the committee who were in the service that to explain what a reenlistment bonus was and how very important it is to our military to in terms of retention. So it was one of those things that popped into bills and popped back out. But working with Representative Detmer, we managed to make sure that we had it in the bill.
As a sergeant major, I'm sure you understand that retaining that experience so that you can train the younger troops as they turn over is critical, isn't
it? It's terribly important.
And Chief Detmer, I want to come to you. In the state of Minnesota, we have now two state veteran cemeteries, and there's a third one under construction up in Duluth. And you passed the bill to support that.
That's right, Tom. And the legislature fulfilled the MDVA's request of $1 million for the biennium, per biennium. So that's $500,000 a year for ongoing fund operations of the new state cemetery in Duluth. And I know if you haven't visited the little one in Little Falls of Preston, those are outstanding cemeteries that we have for our military members that served here out of the state of Minnesota.
So, and they're beautiful and impeccably maintained.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
So it's great that we're getting new cemeteries so that those cemeteries can be closer to the families so they can come and visit. That's the big issue here. And, of course, there's a fourth one in planning, and it's fantastic that we've got that one up in Duluth. There's a lot of veterans up that way.
That's right. That's right.
We're speaking with Representative Bob Detmer and Senator Jerry Newton on Minnesota Military Radio. And, Sergeant Major, I want to come back to you. We provided some grant money to tell some stories about Minnesota Vietnam veterans to Twin Cities Public Television.
That's correct, Tom. This is the Ken Burns series that he's doing on Vietnam. I believe it's going to be airing in September or October of this year. And most of the filming is done. They're still putting it together, and we wanted to make sure that TPT had all of the funding that they needed to make this program a success.
And they're working on that very hard. We had them in the studio recently, and we'll play that coming up in a month or two. And I believe that whole series is going to be August or September.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact date. It seemed to me September seems to stick with me as a date that it was going to be aired.
And Sergeant Major, both of us as Vietnam veterans, I'm looking forward to seeing that, aren't you?
I am as well, yes.
Yeah. That should be a great one.
And there's so many things that happen while we're in country that we're not aware of that's going on around us. We seem to be so focused on the area that we're in at the time. So,
but I might see some things I can't remember anymore, too.
Yes,
we'll see how that goes. Chief, you also did some work on the something called the Veterans Journey Home.
That's right. The Veterans Journey Home is a one-time funding it's a grant program that must be used in support of developing new and rehabilitating affordable housing for veterans. And this is those that have moderate income and veterans and their families that need some housing. And that's what that money, the grants are going to be used for.
And hopefully that'll keep those people from becoming homeless.
That's right.
And being even a bigger problem.
And the MDVA is, I know General Shalito or Commissioner Shalito, that's one of his big goals is to eliminate homelessness in our veterans population.
And I know they work very closely with MACV and all the other veteran service organizations to make sure that we prevent them from becoming homeless. But if they are, let's get them back into some housing and let's get them back to work.
That's correct.
Sergeant Major, there's something that we've been talking about for years, and that's a bridge that's been closed out by the Minneapolis Home. We finally took care of it.
This is really important because there's only one point of egress getting into the home. And with that bridge down, we've really had to come up with the funding to make sure that we've got at least two points of egress. A lot of things happen on that campus besides for the military. A lot of civilian events take place there as well.
And it's almost pretty dangerous in the summertime when they've got races and all kinds of things going. If there's only one entrance and there's an emergency of some kind, how do the fire trucks and the ambulance just get in and out of there?
So exactly.
It's great that the legislature provided $7.8 million to repair that and put it back into order.
And Tom, last week I was guest speaker on Memorial Day at the Veterans Home in Minneapolis, and I just mentioned that lightly during my speech. You should have heard their rows of applause. That bridge is going up.
Bet you got a standing ovation.
That's
out
right.
But gentlemen, we're just about out of time for this segment. I should explain to our listeners that I'm addressing these two state legislators by their military ranks. Sergeant Major for Senator Jerry Newton. No disrespect, sir. You gave me the permission to do that, right?
That's correct.
And Representative Bob Detmer, who retired as the Chief Warrant Officer for. Gentlemen, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some more of these legislative accomplishments from the past session. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've had the pleasure of having two Minnesota state legislators in the studio, Senator Jerry Newton, DFL District 37, and Representative Bob Detmer, Republican from District 39A. And we've been talking about veterans issues, so there hasn't been any discussion of politics because both of these gentlemen are on the same page trying to take care of our veterans and the families of veterans. And Bob, we ran out of time in that first section. I wanted to ask you about the veterans' homes in the state of Minnesota. I think the legislature provided some funds for some past due maintenance.
That's right, Tom. The MDVA Asset Preservation, they call it the Asset Preservation Program. We allotted $5 million in repair of critical infrastructure projects of Minnesota veterans' homes throughout the state. So if you take a look at the five homes, whether it's heating plants or windows or roofs or whatever those infrastructure things that are needed for asset preservation, we take care of those things first. And then we can look, we might talk about maybe adding a veteran home here or there, but we take care of our infrastructure and our asset preservation first.
And just like our listeners who live in their house, you can't live in a house for very long without doing some maintenance or it's going to catch up with you. So that's a great great thing to have passed. And Sergeant Major, I understand we took care of some of our disabled veterans if they wanted to go to a state park.
Yes, this was legislation that in the Senate, Senator Abler had, and he asked me to carry it and hustle it through the Veterans Affairs Committee and the State Government Committee. And what it does is it permits any veteran who has a disability of any type free access to Minnesota state parks. There'll be a form that the veterans can fill out at the park to certify that they are a disabled veteran. But they also, by and large, most of us who have any sort of a disability have a VA card. And on the VA card, it'll show that you have service connected, which will indicate that you have a disability of some sort. So that in itself should be sufficient for people to get into the parks.
Great move. It's good to get our disabled veterans out of the house and out into the fresh air.
Absolutely.
Chief, we also have a lot of veteran service organizations and veterans clubs that are struggling around the state. And I was over there to visit you one during the session, and they were in there testifying, and some of them have a hard time paying their taxes, and you did some things to help them.
Well, many of these VFWs, American Legions, they own property. They have a building where the veterans come in and meet, and they have meetings, and many times they also share their facilities with community groups and so forth, and they do have to pay property taxes. So I had a bill that would reduce their property taxes. It's not eliminating them, but that's something I'll be working on again. But it helps them to reduce the property taxes and keep more of the money within the district so that they can put more money back into their communities, like schools and so forth, when they come to them for help with buying uniforms or whatever it might be. So,
and can I just add something to that? We, as you know, have been losing a lot of our VFWs and Legions. They just haven't been viable. And so this will help some of them stay alive because they serve not only veterans, but in many of the smaller communities especially, they serve the entire community for weddings and get-togethers.
And we have all of the veteran service organizations on the show throughout the year, and they all do a lot of great work to help out in their communities and to help take care of veterans and the families of veterans. So it's great to keep them around and keep them doing all that good work. Gentlemen, you also passed a couple of bills to provide some funds for Legionville and for the Veterans Rest Camp. But we need to move on just a little bit. We're talking with Senator Jerry Newton, DFL District 37, and Representative Bob Detmer, Republican District 39A, on Minnesota Military Radio. Gentlemen, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was it seems that the VA has authorized us to have some more beds in Minnesota, and apparently up to three new homes with 70 beds each, if they do the numbers correctly. And Sergeant Major, is the legislature working on that? Is that something that's coming up for next year?
Yes, actually, two of the communities, Bemidji and
Montevideo,
had submitted proposals, and this was in the original bill. There were $10 million placed in the original state government bill, which was removed at, I think, at the governor's request, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. The communities, Monticello especially, has done a lot of work, or Montevideo, excuse me, has done a lot of work in the community raising money, and Bemidji has done the same thing. So one of the intentions is to try to have homes where the veterans are so that they don't have to come to Minneapolis or to some place distant from the family. So we want to, you know, have as many homes as we can close to where the veterans are located.
And the federal government, they allow us to have so many beds in the state of Minnesota, and we're allowed another 144 beds. So that would make at least two veterans' homes out of 72-bed veterans' homes. And another one that's in the mix is Fillmore County down in the southeastern part of the state. So you have three communities that are looking at they would like to have a veterans' home in their community.
And, Bob, I understand that we've got a waiting list of veterans that are trying to get into the homes that are somewhere between 750 and 1,000 veterans, and might take them a month or 2 months or a year to get in. So a few more beds would be helpful, yeah, wouldn't it?
That's correct. And what Jerry said about having a home that's fairly close to where you live, that's an area that we're looking at too. But unless the state makes a commitment and get those the request to the federal VA, the federal VA cannot put us on a priority list until the state makes a commitment financially.
So, Sergeant Major, the next session coming up next year is a bonding year, as I understand it.
Yes.
So, is that an appropriate time to talk about some of these things?
Yes. The veterans' homes are bonding issues. And the state puts up one-third of the money. The federal government will match it with two-thirds of the money for the building. So we can be sure that these will come back. We had a lot of, how would you say, Bob, pressure from the communities concerned, you know, a lot of lobbying. They came out in full force.
So those communities are raising their own funds.
They're raising their own funds, and they've got a lot of community interest in it.
So they need some state funds and then the federal funding to put this in order.
Yes.
Our state government finance committee had a listening session up in Montevideo, and one thing that really hit me really good is a World War II veteran came up to the mic, and he said, I'm here to speak not for myself, but because by the time this home is built, I won't be around, but it's for the veterans coming up behind me, and that made a big impression on me.
Yeah, all the veterans are always taking care of the next generation coming up behind us, and we got to keep doing that. And Bob, one of the things I assume you're probably going to talk about a little bit is we've got over 60 facilities in the Minnesota National Guard all over the state, and a lot of those are getting old. There's some deferred maintenance there, too. Is that part of your bonding discussion as well?
That will be part of our discussion. And I know Military Affairs and Veterans Affairs, they do an excellent job coming to the Capitol, telling us what their needs are, not what their wants are, but what their needs are. And we take a look at that very seriously when it comes to bonding.
There's all kinds of people asking you for stuff, but there's certain things we've got to take care of.
There's the difference between wants and needs.
And Military Affairs also has a schedule of what they want to do and when they want to do it. And some of it could potentially involve closing some of the smaller armories that are no longer efficient. So,
no, they've got a 30-year plan they've been working on, and we're going to have them on the show and talk about that a little later this year.
Which is nice because so many of the agencies that come to us and want money don't have a plan. They just have wants.
That's great to have that put together. Sergeant Major, we just got about 30 seconds each left. Looks like you had a great year for veterans issues and another year coming up. How do you feel about it?
I feel good. As you found out, Tom, we work really well together in the legislature, Democrats and Republicans and veterans of all of the service. There are probably 12 of us in the legislature. And we pull together, and we tend to get pretty much what we want because we are united and we present a united front.
Sergeant Major, this is as peaceful a couple of politicians, do I dare say it, in the studio and getting along together and working together. It's great to see. Bob, just a few seconds left.
Well, I guess every day is a good day, especially when you can say it's a Veterans Day. And chairing the committee in the Veterans Affairs Division, I told all the 15 members of my committee, when you come in here and you want one of your bills heard dealing with veterans issues, your bill will be heard, regardless if it's a Democrat bill or a Republican bill. It's a nonpartisan committee, and I'm proud to say that.
And Bob, I was over there for a few of those committee hearings, and I have great empathy for both of you for sitting in long hours listening to all of those asks and trying to figure out what's correct and what isn't. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us in the studio today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
With Senator Jerry Newton, DFL District 37, and Representative Bob Detmer, Republican from District 39A. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear from Minnesota's first female Army general. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet Minnesota's first female Army General Officer. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
This year marks the tremendous achievement of 130 years of exemplary service within our Minneapolis Veterans Home. Originally an old soldier's home for veterans of the Civil War, the Veterans Homes reflects how the needs of our nation's heroes have changed and the ways in which they remain the same. Our Veterans Homes provide person-centered care according to the individual needs of each resident. Today, the focus of the homes has shifted to include finding housing and jobs within the community for our veterans. However, the home continues to meet and exceed veterans' physical, social, and spiritual needs. The homes remain a place of around-the-clock care provided by our dedicated staff who make every day Veterans Day. With this anniversary in mind, we look forward to the next 130 years of serving those who served.
Thank you, Commissioner Chalideau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now from the Minnesota National Guard is the Assistant Adjutant General at the Joint Force Headquarters, Brigadier General Joanne Clyborn. General, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Ma'am, I've been looking forward to meeting you ever since I heard you were promoted to be the first Army National Guard in Minnesota General. And so thank you for coming to the studio today, and we want to share with our listeners a little bit about your background. How long did it take to get to be a general in the Minnesota Army National Guard?
Oh, only a short 27 years.
27 years. I better get started. I don't know if I've got that much time left, ma'am. Can you tell us when and where did you start, and did you start as an enlisted person?
I did. Actually, I was 17. I swore I would never join the military or marry anyone in the military. My father was a Vietnam veteran, two-time Purple Heart recipient, and I had seen the effects of active duty life on my family. But at age 17, you don't really have any skill sets, and I was heading off to college, and so I joined the National Guard because I wanted to be part of the community. I wanted to be able to be there in events of disaster, riot, those types of things. And then one day I was in formation, and the first sergeant said, at the time it was Private Wyvell, "I have a school for you, but don't you worry, it's a gentleman's school." Next thing I know is an officer candidate school in a parking lot in my dress uniform doing push-ups.
And that was in 1992, ma'am?
I graduated in 1992 from officer candidate school in the state of Missouri, yeah.
In the state of Missouri, and something you never thought you were going to do.
Absolutely not. That was not in the career plan. I don't know that at the time, if you had asked Private Wyvell if she would ever become an officer, let alone a general officer, just not something I had envisioned at the time.
So you were a weekend soldier in those days?
I was. I was actually assigned to an engineer company. I liked the idea of doing things that were not traditional, and back then there weren't many women in combat engineer fields.
And at the same time, you found time to go to college.
That's right. I put myself through school, and the Guard helped with that.
So you graduated from the University of Mary Hardin Baylor with a BA in Business Administration.
That's right, and a minor in psychology.
Uh-oh, a minor in psychology. We're in trouble. And at some point, you went back to school and got your JD. You are now an attorney, and you got that from the University of St. Thomas.
That is correct.
So you spent a lot of years going to school.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's an advantage we have in this country, and you should take advantage of it anytime you get an opportunity to learn new things.
So was any of that full-time school, or was that night school?
Actually, through college, I worked during the day and put myself through school at night, and then the last 2 years I was able to go full-time at the University of Mary Hardin Baylor.
And what year did you, I understand you're the founding partner of the firm of Brecke, Clyborn, and is it Ribbage?
Ribbage. It's a good Iron Range name.
Okay. And when did you form that law firm?
Right after law school. Not common, but after I finished law school, balancing out my military obligations and family obligations, I met my two law partners in law school, and we thought we could do something different in our community. So we started the law firm when we graduated in 2005.
And what type of practice do you have?
It's a general practice, so I do specifically military family law and a little bit of criminal law. My partners do family law, wills, trust, and estates, real estate, those types of things.
So do you get involved with some returning service members that have been deployed and perhaps not treated well by their employers?
So I don't do a lot of the Reemployment Act stuff, but I do work with individuals who do. The biggest area that I've worked on is something called the Uniform Deployed Parents Custody and Visitation Act, because what I was seeing was service members were at a disadvantage in their custody and divorces as a result of wearing the uniform. And so I worked with some of our legislators in the family law bar to create legislation that protects custody agreements for our service members who choose to serve our nation and have children.
We're speaking with Brigadier General Joanna Clyborn from the Army National Guard here in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. So, General, you've had a thriving law practice. You're married. You have some children. At any point, did your law partners have any reservations about the military schools you had to go to in order to become a general?
None whatsoever. I've been very blessed. My partners, Barb Brecky and Rebecca Ribbage, have always been avid supporters. I remember when I was given the opportunity to go to the War College, which is a schooling requirement that you have to have in order to become a general officer. But it doesn't mean you will become a general officer. But it's definitely a nonstop, non-negotiable if you don't go. And I contemplated not going once I was selected because I was afraid how it would affect the law firm, how it would affect my family. And I didn't want to decimate the law firm again. Being a small firm, you don't have the ability just to pick up and leave as easily. And they absolutely threatened my life if I did not take the appointment and go. And so
great partners, ma'am.
Awesome partners.
Now, when I look at where you've been assigned, it looks like you spent almost 8 years in different assignments over at the 34th Infantry Division as a Red Bull. You went through a lot of positions over there.
I did. I was very fortunate to be exposed to a lot of different things. Because I was a female combat engineer, there wasn't a lot of upward mobility within the engineer field for me. And so I found ways, and my mentors found ways to help me take the different positions I needed in order to continue to develop and grow.
And, of course, at the division, we've just had General Jensen on the show, and we went through a list of the officers that have been division commander, and it's like a who's who of the military in Minnesota. So for 8 years, you got to experience several division commanders that were extraordinary officers, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I've had the privilege to deploy with some of them and serve alongside of them. And some of my peers have gone on to do some incredible things.
And I understand you served in Operation Iraqi Freedom in Basra, Iraq. How was that experience for at that time? Let's see, you must have been a lieutenant colonel.
I was. I was a newly promoted lieutenant colonel. And it was like most combat deployments, an eye-opening, life-changing experience. I wouldn't change it, but at the same time, I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Now, ma'am, it's my understanding that I think we have about 25% of the force now are female soldiers, where when I was in the military back in the Vietnam days, there were very few, if any, females in the military. It's changed pretty rapidly, and there's a lot of ladies now, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely, and it's a wide-open field. There is no area now that is excluded to women who want to serve their country.
So both the Army and Air Force and the Minnesota National Guard, all of the job fields are open?
Correct, they are.
And how do your fellow female soldiers feel about that? Got to feel pretty good.
It is. It's a long-term coming. No one looking for a special buy or pass. They just want an equal opportunity to compete.
Ma'am, we did a show on this about 2 years ago, and we had a couple NCOs and an officer on, and we asked them about that very topic, and the three of them, none of them wanted to leave their career field because they were so deep into it, but they seemed just thrilled that everything was open. Those are some great changes, aren't they?
They absolutely are, and I think it's a sign of the times. You don't want to leave half of your force behind when you have an ability to choose from a variety. You don't want one half of it left behind.
And so when you were in Basra, Iraq, were you comfortable with the entire deployment and all of the soldiers that were there?
I wouldn't say comfortable. 130-degree heat isn't exactly comfortable, but absolutely. Everyone did their job. Everyone was professional. We had a mission, and our goal was to do our mission and get back home.
Ma'am, we've had the opportunity to go to Kuwait with the show twice now, once in 2011, once last year. And it just looked like a normal experience because there were men and women and soldiers, everybody doing their job. And to me, it was something to see because when I was in Vietnam, they were all guys.
Right.
But it looked like a great experience and that things really have changed and everybody's on board with it.
We still have a ways to go. It's not all smooth sailing. But as a whole, a soldier is a soldier regardless of the gender. And you do your job and you do your mission to the best of your ability.
Ma'am, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about your military career and some special house guests that you had a few years ago in the Claiborne home. We're talking to Brigadier General Joanna Claiborne on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been chatting with Brigadier General Joanna Claiborne, who is the first Army National Guard General in the state of Minnesota. General, it's been great to get to know you today, and there's a story here that we teased at the end of the first segment, and it was about some special house guests from a very, very different culture. What happened and how did you get involved in this, General?
Well, it was 2008, and our 1st Brigade combat team had done an extended deployment of 22 months, and the brigade surgeon came to me and said, we need a host family for a week or two for a young girl that we had done a surgery for in Iraq. Would you be willing to host them while they have some surgery that needs to correct a problem here in the U.S.? And she'd had basically a tumor removed, about a 9-pound tumor, as a result of some munition dust that the child may have consumed. And so I agreed. My 1 to 2 weeks turned into 9 weeks of a mother and a daughter, it was Lamia and Shana, who basically were going through a spinal correction. Gillette Children's Hospital had donated the surgery. Dr. Koop over there donated all his services. Northwest provided the airline, and they just needed a place for them to stay for the next 9 weeks.
And due to culture changes, your husband and your family dog and your menu changed quite a bit, didn't it?
Oh, man, it was a surprise for sure. So men that are not related are not supposed to be in the same area. So my husband, being a great man, banished himself to the bedroom. The dog was seen as not clean, and they were afraid of our golden retriever. And so our neighbors graciously took our dog during the time that they were staying with us. We didn't have an interpreter with us most of the time, and so between me and them, we mimed a lot. We pointed. We learned. We were frustrated. We were happy. Things like how to use the indoor plumbing, the shower, driving on the freeways, it was different. And then seeing my daughter, who at the time was 8, going to school and helping her with her schoolwork, whereas the daughter had not quite learned how to read, and she was 17. And the opportunities, and it was a great opportunity for my family to become exposed to a different religion, a different culture. The Shia Mosque in Minneapolis took us under their wing and really reached out to us and helped take care of this mother and her daughter as basically we were able to help them.
And the problem that the young lady was having after they removed the tumor was she had some curvature of the spine, and they had to try to straighten that out before it collapsed on itself. Was that the basic issue?
Correct. So the tumor was, once it had been removed, all the vital organs that had been supported by that tumor now had no longer any support. So in effect, the collapse of the spine was starting to cut off the vital blood supply of the organs.
So this was an opportunity for that young lady to get some corrective surgery and hopefully go back home and try to reclaim part of her life.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, because of the surgery, she will have a better life, but at the same time, the concern is that she's not exactly, in her culture and her tribe, seen as a full woman as a result of it. And so she'll have a better life expectancy, but I don't know what the end result of her life will be.
Well, you certainly tried, ma'am, and must have been a big eye-opener for your family.
I think absolutely it was. We knew that I was getting ready to deploy. My daughter did not know that. At the time, we had kept that information from her because sometimes we know about deployments in advance. And it gave her an opportunity to see why it was so important that her mom was going to go to another country to provide opportunities for people that we didn't know and firsthand experience all the blessings that we have in this country.
We're speaking with Brigadier General Joanne Clyburn on Minnesota Military Radio. Ma'am, we talked about your deployment, and a lot of people, I think, in Minnesota and around the country think what they think when soldiers are deployed, it's typically men. But we've mentioned earlier that now the force is almost 25 or about 25% women. It's a little different when the mom goes on deployment and the dad has to stay home and take care of the family. I think I'd be in shock personally. But how did your family react to that, and how did they get through it?
Well, my husband is, like I said, a trooper, and he stepped right in, and he does all the great things that he does, and there was no doubt that my daughter was going to be, our daughter was going to be okay. But it was hard as a mother. I had a family member actually basically ask me how I could deploy. It must be a bad mom to do that. And my response is, are the men that I deploy with not good fathers? Are they not as important? And so to me, in order to be successful in the military and to achieve true parity, we have to realize that both parents in a relationship are as equally as important.
And the bottom line here is when our service members deploy, they sacrifice, but the family sacrifices as well.
Absolutely, they do. There is a rippling effect on the spouse, on the children, and the community as a whole. And the family support and the support of the families and the employers are so critical for the success of our service members and their families.
And ma'am, as a general officer, I'm sure you've seen the benefit of the Yellow Ribbon programs back here to support the families. Maybe just shovel some snow and mow the lawns and come over and visit and have a cup of coffee. But when you're deployed, that's got to be all the support that's back here helping take care of the families has to be really important.
It is incredibly important. You are trying to focus on the mission at hand. You're working sometimes 16, 18-hour days. And to know that someone is cutting the grass or stopping by with a casserole or checking to see whether your daughter needs a sponsor for Girl Scout camp makes a huge difference in the ability for that service member to do their job, no matter how small the act is of helping.
Ma'am, I've heard that for the deployed service member, you get into a daily routine when you're deployed, and it's almost easier than being at home and dealing with anything can happen at home.
Absolutely it is. And I think service members recognize that, but I think sometimes in the community we see the hardships that our service members go through, and we don't realize that it's much more harder that now the parent staying at home has to balance both roles, and they have to handle the house responsibilities, and they have to do the things that potentially had another partner to help with, and now that is not there. Their job is far harder, as far as I'm concerned, than when I'm deployed.
And for all our service members now in the Minnesota National Guard and in the reserves, they keep coming back and they keep reenlisting. A lot of people ask us, why do they keep doing that when they know they're probably going to be deployed? They want to get that next promotion. They're there because they want to be there, aren't they?
Absolutely. And I think that goes back to, if not me, then who, right? And in a sense of a community, in the sense of what we do is important for the nation overall. There are some personal benefits that come with it, absolutely. But at the end of the day, my kid has the freedoms that she has, the ability to marry who she wants, and the ability to get an education because the ideals of this country and the people are willing to wear this country's uniform.
Ma'am, one last question. We've got listeners on 39 radio stations all over Minnesota. If some of those young ladies were thinking about joining the Minnesota National Guard and following in your footsteps, what would you have to say to them?
I would say never, ever let anyone tell you no. There is a way. If you have a will, it will happen. You can make it happen.
General, thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it, Tom.
That was Brigadier General Joanna Clyborn on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. Director, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Director, I was out to the VA Medical Center this week, and things look great. That atrium is just beautiful.
You know, it's really something that we're proud of. We did a project on that that we completed maybe 3 years ago, but, you know, it's really ended up being a very welcoming environment for veterans. We moved some services down there. We have those red vest volunteers who are incredibly helpful for our veterans that are coming in the facility. Thanks for noticing. That is a beautiful area in our hospital.
Director, I understand our new VA secretary has announced some priorities. Can you explain those to us?
Well, just briefly, Tom. He's identified five new priorities that he has us working on, and just to go over them at a very high level, you know, includes providing greater choice for veterans, you know, where they get their health care and how they get it. Previously, it was more centered around wait times and distance from the facility, and he is really intending to move that more along the lines of veterans' choice, and they're getting the care more in conjunction with their primary care doctor and the best place for them to get it, irrespective of wait times or other issues. So that's a big change for us. It's not happened yet, but that's the vision of the new secretary.
Now, is that going to be across the board, or is he going to start that in the hospitals that are having more trouble and maybe, you know, let you wait a little while because you're doing so well?
Well, you know, one of the great things about Minneapolis, again, he's going to sort of focus on those facilities that have had quality issues. We have been a five-star facility for 5 years in a row, and again, I'm not to say that we don't have our own issues related to access and service, you know, sometimes, but you know, I think we will be less affected by that, and I hope veterans continue to choose to get their health care with us. But the goal is eventually that veterans will be given this kind of a choice everywhere. If you're a good VA site, veterans will choose you. If you're not, they likely will not. So our really goal in this is to ensure that we continue to be a really good, high-quality health care site so that veterans want to get their care from us.
Director Kelly, I know that you've been doing these town hall meetings for several years now. Are you getting some good feedback from your patients or veterans?
Yeah, so the town halls, and what we do, Tom, is we alternate metro area and out of state to ensure that we get some good coverage wherever we go. The next one's going to be on June 21st here at the Whipple Building in the Twin Cities. So you know, whenever we learn things from veterans in areas where we can be doing better, it's I consider it a plus. It's a success. And so our last one we had up in North Metro and reasonably well attended. They don't generate the level of attendance that they did initially when the VA had some sort of highly visible issues that caused, you know, more veterans to turn out. But they've been useful for us, certainly. And I think whenever a veteran or a veteran service organization or a county veteran service officer identifies areas where their constituents are not getting what they want or need, on the one hand, I don't like hearing it. But on the other hand, you know, that's a success. That's how we learn. That's how we can improve our services. So they have been worthwhile. Yeah.
Director, we just got a few seconds left. Are you still looking for some nurses and doctors?
Always. Always looking for doctors and nurses. And so, you know, most acutely in some of our rural areas, but even in the Twin Cities. So we have over 1,000 nurses on the staff and over 300 doctors. And we are always hiring more. You know, we could always do a better job to improve our access. So you bet. If there's nurses, doctors in your listening audience, or people who are support assistants, you know, medical support type people, we are hiring them as well. So I hope they consider working for the VA.
Director, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. Thanks. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Representative Bob Detmer, Senator Jerry Newton, Brigadier General Joanna Clyburn, Director Pat Kelly, Commissioner Larry Shelido of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we bring back a special guest for Father's Day and hear about the upcoming Patriot Ride. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.